Final Examination. Written by a secret chord and narrated by Jocunda Sykes. Pairing Severus and Harry. Unrated. Pre/. Summary. Is this some sort of test? Everything that doesn't kill you is. Mind you, he added, surviving doesn't always mean you passed. Michelle Segarra West. The grey stone was massive. Crystalline flecks sparkled in the blazing sun, and Harry Potter squinted as he flew a bit to his left, his beloved holly wand extended and aimed directly at the hewn stone hovering in midair. Witches and wizards standing on top of the partially reconstructed wall were bellowing instructions, and the ones on brooms were doing their best to comply without losing their tenuous hold over the massive stone. Harry, go straight up. Slowly. It's not a bloody helicopter, thought Harry. But he pulled up on the clean sweep and drifted into position, managing not to wobble the stone too much. On the other side of the stone, Ginny floated up a couple of feet and raised her side as well. "Move east on three, everybody!" shouted Flitwick from somewhere nearby. Harry wasn't certain which way was east, but Terry was waving and pointing, and Harry gave a sharp nod. The giant stone moved slowly through the air, supported by the charms of a dozen witches and wizards, and, a few minutes later, they lowered it gently into place. It was not nearly as easy as it looked. Thighs burning and body shaking from the effort, Harry flew in a graceful arc back to the ground, where flagons of chilled pumpkin juice waited. He watched as another team started to levitate another block of granite and mopped his sodden brow with a handkerchief. His face was bathed in sweat. His bare torso burned bright red from a relentless sun on a rare clear summer's day. "You ought to be wearing robes," chided Ginny as she pressed a goblet of juice into Harry's hand. "You're red as a pigmy-puff." Harry drained the goblet in a single pull, the cold liquid running in a cool stream down his throat. "Not a Gryffindor banner?" he asked with a grin. "I could wear it like a cape." Ginny was not amused. "We'd be burnt to a crisp. Put something on." She locked eyes with him as she finished her drink. Harry was the first to look away. He shook his head and walked off to set his empty goblet on the wobbly picnic table, mulishly refusing to clothe himself. Madame Pomfrey had several potions that would cure his sunburn. It would be nice if she had some that would work on his guilt. The weeks they'd spent working on the castle had done little to ease Ginny's grief, and Harry wished fervently that she'd go back to the Burrow to rest and heal. But Ginny wanted to be where he was, and Harry knew he wasn't ready to live in close proximity to that many people. He and Ron were sharing their old dormitory, and on the nights Harry was feeling social, he'd join the other Gryffindors in the common room, curl up with Ginny and listen to the conversation swirling around him. The arduous days of hard labour kept him from reliving the last days of the war, but once the sun set and a hush settled over the dormitory, the ghosts of those who had died would invade his dreams, and he'd wake in a panic with sweat dripping off his forehead, trickling down his back. There was no peace to be had in slumber. "Harry! Harry Potter!" Harry's head came up at hearing his name, and he was surprised to see the headmistress walk briskly down the short flight of stairs towards the cluster of people resting under the dappled shade of a beech tree until it was their turn to move the next stone into place. "Hello, Professor," he said as his brow furrowed. A world-weary sigh escaped Minerva McGonagall's lips as her narrowed eyes travelled over Harry's bare skin, and he felt his colour rise under examination. "A shirt would not go amiss, Mr. Potter," she said briskly. "Even in this weather. But that's not why I'm here. I have a favour to request of you. Would you mind coming up to my office for tea?" She paused. "My old office." "Not the headmaster's office?" Harry asked, his eyes widening. "No, but we'll discuss that when I see you." McGonagall's eyes followed the flight of half a dozen mounted brooms as a few more people joined to move the next stone into place. "I do wonder if we'll be ready to open by the 1st of September." Harry turned, his eyes following the demarcation between old stone and new. They'd rebuilt much more of the outer walls than he'd thought, but half of magical Britain were working on rebuilding Hogwarts. "We'll be ready," he said confidently. "The wall's nearly finished, and Professor Sinistra says that the upper floors are nearly all repaired. Dunno about the basement or dungeons, though. We'll discuss those at tea as well." There was something mournful in McGonagall's tone, a deep sorrow in her eyes, and Harry's breath caught as an angry swirl of black robes filled his mind. He bit down hard on the inside of his cheek and closed his eyes against the sudden pain. He'd been such a fool. "Do put on a shirt before you burn any further," she said briskly, becoming once again his stalwart transfiguration professor of old. "Very well," Harry sighed as someone shouted for Group 4 to mount up. "I'll see you later, Professor. he called over his shoulder, as he jogged off to fetch the school broom he'd been using and help levitate the next stone into place. Harry ran nervous hands through his hair and over his ill-fitting school robes as he stood outside McGonagall's office, wondering for the umpteenth time what could be so important that she asked to meet with him in her old Transfiguration office instead of the office that was rightfully hers. Steeling himself, he knocked politely and entered at her command. "Professor," he murmured as he took the offered cup of tea and sat down in the prim chair next to hers. He blew on it and took a sip, finding it hot and milky with just a touch of sugar, the way he liked it best. They chatted for a few minutes about the repairs, about the spells Harry had learnt during the rebuilding, about the gloom that hung over Hogwarts like a shroud. "Now we come to the reason I asked you here, Potter," McGonagall said with her usual crispness. "Professor, would you please call me Harry? I'm not a student here anymore, and Kingsley's already promised me and Ron that we can start the aura training in September." Harry lifted an eyebrow. "He said you were dead set against it." "I am a teacher, mister." "Harry," she said, though her tone wasn't nearly as frosty as it might have been. Some of the life left her eyes, and she seemed to age before Harry's eyes. "Nevertheless, that's not why I asked you here." McGonagall sipped her tea, stalling for time, and Harry's eyes narrowed a bit as he waited. What had McGonagall so concerned? "I cannot get into the headmaster's office," McGonagall said abruptly. "The gargoyle refuses to move aside, and none of us have been able to get in. As far as I know, you were the last one to visit it, and Phyllis suggested that perhaps the gargoyle might allow you to pass." Harry set down his teacup. "You can't get in." He stared for a moment before turning his head in the direction of the headmaster's office, his thoughts racing. "After Voldemort fell," he said slowly, "I went up with Ron and Hermione to tell Dumbledore how it ended. The portraits started cheering and we thought we were being attacked again." His heart pounded and he wiped trembling hands on his robes. "We weren't there long, Professor. The gargoyle wasn't even guarding the door when we went up." But was it when we left? Harry couldn't remember, and he hadn't been back since. "After that, I went up to my old room in Gryffindor Tower, had Creature bring me some food and slept for..." Harry sighed and shook his head. "Around the clock, maybe more. It was a couple of days before I came down. I remember that much. Gets all jumbled up after that. Too many funerals. Too many interviews with the Ministry, with the Aura Office, with the fucking press. Couldn't ask anyone to shield him from it. The Weasleys were mourning Fred. Luna was searching for her father, and Neville had gone with her. Remus was dead. Tonks was dead. Hermione was off to Australia. All Harry could remember about the month that followed was a pervasive numbness that had never entirely gone away. He felt old, used up." McGonagall's face gentled into a smile. "All I'm asking is that you try. We're no worse off if you cannot get past the gargoyle." Harry's brow furrowed. "Professor," he said slowly, "this doesn't mean you're not the headmistress, does it?" The last thing Harry wanted was for the castle to decide he was now in charge. He'd done enough, thank you very much, and had no intention of becoming anything other than an aura trainee. "Not at all. Rather, we believe that Snape..." Something about the way she snarled the name made the hairs on Harry's arms stand up. "Made it so that you would be the only one allowed to enter the tower. But that spell didn't cancel when it should have." Harry sat very still for a moment, forcing air past the sudden lump in his throat. Thoughts of Snape were inevitably linked with memories of that night on the astronomy tower, the full body bind ending when the bright green light of the killing curse enveloped Dumbledore's body. The memory in the pensive. "Do you mean to say that you have developed feelings for the boy?" "Always. The blinding light of Snape's Patronus, thoughts of his mum." Tears filled his eyes and he swallowed convulsively. His heart ached. McGonagall said nothing. She filled his cup before adding to her own and sat quietly whilst Harry composed himself. Tears served no purpose. They never had. "We cannot get into the dungeons either," she added quietly. "That is why no one has started repairs there. Not even Horace can enter, and he is still head of Slytherin House." Harry found himself nodding. "I'll see if I can get through." He wiped his hands on his robes again and found solace in his cup of tea. "When did you want me to do it?" The sympathy in McGonagall's eyes made Harry uncomfortable, and he squirmed in his chair a bit. "Tomorrow," she declared, "after the teams have started work. We'll be alone, and I suspect you'd rather not have an audience." "Thanks," Harry said, smiling wanly. They finished their tea in silence, both caught in the steel trap of memories that refused to let go. "I'd like to go up, please." The gargoyle eyed Harry, its stone eyes filled with suspicion. "Let me see your wand," it croaked, tilting its head arrogantly, and Harry shivered. The gargoyle was doing a damned fine impression of Snape's worst sneer, and Harry wetted his lips as a wave of guilt tore through him. If he had a time-turner, he'd go back and find Snape's body at the very least. Harry exchanged a look with McGonagall and then pulled out his wand. "Holly and Phoenix Feather, 11.5 inches, he said as he displayed it for the stone gargoyle, feeling a bit idiotic as he did so. But who was he to question magic?
"Idiot boy,"
growled the gargoyle, and Harry bristled at hearing a very Snape-like voice emerge from the carved granite face. Better anger than fear, and he chuckled mirthlessly at reaching that conclusion.
"Touch me with it."
Standing as far back as possible, Harry did as directed, touching the end of his wand to the middle of the gargoyle's forehead, right where, would there be any justice in the world, a lightning bolt scar ought to be. The gargoyle glared at him, though how it managed to accomplish such a feat was a bit beyond him. As far as Harry could tell, it hadn't moved a figurative muscle.
"You may go up," the gargoyle said begrudgingly.
"Alone? But she's the headmistress. Alone, or not at all."
Harry's eyes narrowed as he studied the gargoyle, its face as stony as Snape's ever was. "What did you expect? It's made of rock," he thought. Harry mentally added the idiot just in case the gargoyle was adept at some bizarre form of legitimacy. Given Snape's paranoia, it wouldn't be a stretch of the imagination to believe he'd somehow managed to enchant it to do that.
"I'm sorry," Harry said to McGonagall. "I'll see if I can get this sorted."
With a last glance at McGonagall, Harry rode the staircase up to Dumbledore's office. He paused at the doorway, his hand raised to knock as he always had done before remembering there was no one inside to answer. Not Dumbledore. Not Snape. He waited until the grief that seemed to plague him a dozen times a day had subsided to manageable levels and quietly opened the door. He stood in the centre of the room, inhaling deeply through his nose as his eyes travelled over familiar territory. How had Snape managed to spend a year in here and leave no sign of himself behind? It was almost as if the man had left it intact, knowing his occupancy was temporary, that he wouldn't survive the conflict.
"How are you, Harry?"
The gentleness of the voice from the portrait took him by surprise. Harry nodded to it. "Headmaster,
I see Minerva has finally asked for your help. I had wondered if she knew you'd been here before."
Dumbledore's eyes were steady, his expression fond.
"Severus was a private man and shared his secrets with no one. Except you, of course. He would have to have done, wouldn't he?"
Harry pulled up a chair up to the portrait and slumped into it. "He loved my mother," he whispered. "He loved her and hated me. Even at the end, he hated me."
"Do you truly believe that? After all he did for you?"
"We'll never know, will we?" Harry said bitterly. "You kept his secret. You told no one that he was a good man, like he asked. All you ever said was, trust him, Harry, but you never explained why I should." He turned baleful eyes on Headmaster. "Could have gone terribly wrong, you know. If Professor Snape hadn't given us his memories, I never would have walked into that clearing."
"It was your empathy that saved us," Dumbledore said. "Your compassion for a dying man, even one you did not care for."
"I hated him, Professor," interrupted Harry. "More than I ever did Voldemort. I watched him murder you in cold blood. The way you knew I would. And then you wanted me to trust him. After that!" His voice rose, and I discovered that he was nearly shouting.
"Harry,
I understand. I do." Harry sagged back into the chair, head in hand. After a few minutes of reflection, he looked up. "Why am I here? Do you know? Why me?" Dumbledore regarded Harry for a long moment.
"This is conjecture, but I believe you know Severus better than any person alive. The memories he shared with you were the most personal recollections of the most insular man I've ever known. You have witnessed some of his worst moments, events that brought him to his knees. Knowing he played a part in the death of the only person he ever loved was crippling."
Dumbledore's gaze sharpened.
"I am certain you can appreciate, if not understand, how devastating a loss such as that can be."
"Serious," Harry whispered. How many people had told Snape that it wasn't his fault Lily Evans was dead? Had anyone? Not that it mattered. Snape wouldn't have believed them any more than Harry believed the people who told him he wasn't responsible for Sirius's death.
Severus never recovered from that. And there I was, constant reminder of my dad, who he loathed, and my mum, who he mourned. Harry wondered how it would feel to see a little miniature Sirius running amok, knowing his own actions were the reason the child didn't have a father, and he suspected he'd find the resultant guilt debilitating. I wish I could forgive him in person. And that, I believe, is why you. In allowing you access to his office, Severus is seeking absolution from the only one who has the power to bestow it. I can think of no one else Severus would trust with sorting through his belongings and disposing of them properly. Almost anyone else would be tempted to destroy all his possessions, because they think he was a Death Eater. That, and because Severus endeared himself to no one, he claimed no one as friend. You were, though, Harry said. You were his friend, even if he didn't believe it. Yes, replied the portrait. I regarded Severus as a dear friend, although I doubt he saw me anything more than a meddling old fool. I regret the many tribulations I laid upon his shoulders, but there was no one better to see them through. I should think he found it incredibly frustrating to discover he was fond of you, Harry said, his eyes gleaming. We're a bit alike in that respect. Dumbledore laughed, and his eyes twinkled brightly. My dear boy, I imagine you and Severus are more alike than you know. Dumbledore settled into his chair. Now, tell me about Miss Granger and Mr. Weasley. Harry spent the better part of an hour chatting with Dumbledore's portrait, bringing the headmaster up to date on the rebuilding project, on the doings of the ministry, speaking about Ron and Hermione's blossoming romance, confiding his reluctance to enter into a serious relationship with Ginny, and feeling a wave of relief when Dumbledore seemed to give him permission to wait a little longer before making a commitment of that nature. Miss Weasley has another year of school, and you have aura training starting soon, not to mention the task Severus set you. As I have said all too often, you have quite enough to be going on with. There is no need for you to rush any further into adulthood. It's a bit late for that, Harry said with a snort. He lifted his hand and offered Dumbledore a rueful grin. But I do understand. Take my time with Ginny, don't rush into anything I'm not ready for, and go through Professor Snape's things. He gnawed on his lip for a moment. You were here whilst he was in charge. Any idea where I ought to start? Dumbledore rested a long, gnarled finger against his cheek as he regarded Harry. Severus spent much of his time at that desk. He gestured to the familiar desk standing sentinel in the middle of the room, resolutely guarding the secrets it contained within. Even Harry could feel it bristling with power. Paperwork is eternal, I'm afraid. Even great adventures must be catalogued somewhere. Harry smiled. Even a King's Cross station devoid of people still had timetables along the platform. And the dungeons? Professor McGonagall says no one can get down there, not even Slughorn. Interesting. Dumbledore's eyes cut towards the space on the wall where Snape's portrait should have been. A last-ditch effort to save his Slytherins, perhaps? An air of sorrow surrounded Dumbledore, his shoulders slumping as he meandered through his abode. Severus confided in me very little, I'm afraid. He preferred to vent his spleen before seeking my counsel. It would not have come as a surprise to learn that he kept his rooms in the dungeons. He knew them better than anyone, even Filch. They are a bit creepy, Harry said, his brow furrowing as he revised the scope of his task. So, desk, dungeon, rooms. Forgive me, sir, but where are the headmaster's private rooms? I reckon Professor Snape would have used them as well. If you say quarters as you step onto the spiral stair, Dumbledore said, it will stop halfway down where you will find a discoloured stone. Press your hand against it and whisper, all is well, and a door will appear. The password cannot be changed, but it is likely that Severus enchanted the doorway. He was always a suspicious man. Suspicious didn't begin to cover it. The desk bit Harry twice and burnt his fingers three times. It gave him a shock when he rested his elbows on it, and he was positive it tripped him when he got up to pace. You asked me to do this, you Burke, he shouted at it. A titter of amusement ran around the room and he glared at the portraits. Finite incantatum did nothing, but he felt better for having pointed his wand at the cursed thing. His eyes fell on a bookcase behind Fawkes's old perch, where a shaft of sunlight illuminated a row of Defence Against the Dark Arts textbooks. On a whim, Harry selected Confronting the Faceless, the book Snape had required during the year he taught Defence, and read through the table of contents, finding a chapter on detection spells. This might work, he murmured. He quickly read through the section, lifted his wand and spoke the incantation whilst waving his wand in a slow circle over his head.
He brought it down in a quick slashing movement. Green sparkles surrounded the desk and coalesced, revealing three keyholes and a latch hiding behind some sort of disillusionment spell. Extending his hand cautiously, Harry touched the latch lightly, pulling his fingers away briskly until he was certain the damned thing wasn't going to eat his fingers. He slid the latch over and heard tumblers fall. "Alohomora," he said from a safe distance away, thinking it couldn't possibly be this easy. It was. The centre drawer slid open enticingly, but having been burnt, literally, Harry was in no hurry to test Snape's magic. Behind him, the portraits watched intently, making Harry feel as if he was giving a performance. He rolled his eyes, uncertain about whether he was doing it for his benefit or theirs. "Accio parchment," he said finally, and found himself deluged by reams of paper. There was a quickly stifled laugh, and Harry sighed. Harry gathered up the bits and bobs of parchment, wishing the wizarding world believed in standardisation, what he wouldn't have given for this mess to be on A4, and carried them to a nearby table, his relationship with the desk too adversarial to consider for a moment dropping the folded sheets and thick rolls onto his surface. When he returned for a second armload, he spotted a single sheet of parchment in the centre drawer that hadn't been there a moment ago. Curiously, he pulled it out, his eyebrows climbing into his hairline as he read. 1st of May, 1998. Potter. So you succeeded, and I am presumably dead or entombed in Azkaban, which amounts to the same thing. You had no plan, no strategy, blundering as you did from one inept catastrophe to another, dragging your hapless companions into danger whilst you now reap the accolades you believe you so richly deserve. Do not think for a moment that you've earned any of it, trusting as you have to sheer dumb luck, as your head of house calls your inexplicable ability to emerge unscathed from one disaster after another. I have no doubt the Ministry is, in its infinite wisdom, rewarding you for completing your fool's errand by ensuring its saviour need never work again. Surely the defeat of a Dark Lord deserves some reward. If you accept their kind offers, Potter, you will prove every criticism I laid at your feet. Only the arrogant feel they deserve everything they have not earned. Only the mediocre feel they have nothing to prove. I am not so easy. By now, even you must have noticed that the dungeons are no longer accessible. This is your NEWT, Potter. This is your opportunity to prove me wrong. You'll need to demonstrate your abilities in the areas of charms, defence against the dark arts, herbology, potions, and transfiguration to break the enchantments I've set upon them. Do not think you can deceive me by having your little friends do your work for you. I know you too well, the mistakes you consistently make, the shortcuts you attempt rather than learn anything. And you know me well enough to know that I'll see through any of your little deceptions. If you have managed to read to this point without destroying this message, then know that I do nothing without a purpose. It may surprise you to know that your mother was my best friend. Amongst my belongings you will find a few precious keepsakes, notes from her, some photographs, an essay we wrote together for Muggle Studies, a ridiculous course. You are welcome to keep anything you find. Amor Tentia is the key. Severus Snape. Harry went white, then red with blinding anger, and then felt his throat tighten as Snape dangled mementos of his mother in front of him as bait. Mostly, though, he felt guilt for having left Snape on the floor of the Shrieking Shack to die forgotten and alone. He crumpled the parchment in his fist, then smoothed it out again. A postscript appeared. P.S. I left a letter for Minerva in the middle left drawer. If you can manage to remove it without incinerating the contents of the drawer, please deliver it to her hand. Sitting on a low stool, Defence Against the Dark Arts textbook perched precariously on his knees, Harry cast spell after spell at the drawer, trying to decipher the enchantment Snape had placed upon it. He was so intent on his work that he didn't notice a thick sandwich and goblet of pumpkin juice that a house elf delivered. The drawer glowed blue every time he cast a detection spell, but Harry didn't know what it meant. The book was no help. He scratched his head and thought. A memory surfaced. Snape snatched the Marauder's map out of his hand and poking it with his wand. It was worth a try. "Reveal your secrets," he said in an authoritative voice. Smoke came billowing out from behind the edges of the faceplate, and Harry grimaced as he coughed and choked. "Don't be an idiot, Potter. Think." It was Snape's voice, and Harry felt his cheeks burn, wondering if there was anything inside left to save. He slumped back and noticed the presence of food. "I am thinking, you git," he growled as he came to his feet. There was no heat behind it. Snape was dead, and he couldn't change that.
You didn't teach us protective charms, Harry groaned.
Charms. He took a bite from the sandwich and wandered over to the bookcase. Protecting your possessions from friend and foe appeared rife with possibilities, so Harry pulled it down and started to read whilst he ate. As he read, it became evident that Snape was incredibly good at magic. The vast majority of protective spells could only be broken by their caster, but sometime during the battle, Snape had managed to set up a series of charms that only Harry could break. How, though? When did you get some of my hair or my blood? The last couldn't have been too hard. Harry had spilt blood in nearly every part of the castle during his 6 years in residence here. Acting on a hunch, he pricked his finger and smeared a drop of blood onto the drawer. Finite incantatum, he said, flicking his wand decisively. It slid open without a sound. Hearing a slight susurration of robes, he glanced back at Dumbledore's portrait and found it smiling warmly at him. You knew, he said as he turned to face it. Yes, Dumbledore replied simply, but I gave Severus my word that I would not assist you. Some of the twinkle left Dumbledore's eyes. In his own way, Severus loved you as much as he hated you, and loathed himself for feeling anything about you at all. The last thing he said was, Look at me, Harry said quietly, because of my mum's eyes. I know how much he loved her. I hope she forgave him. Before she died, I mean. He returned to the desk and found two envelopes in the drawer tucked away between a sneakerscope and a bottle of old Ogden's fire whiskey. One of them had Minerva's name on it. The other was unlabeled. He broke the seal on that one, pulled out a short length of parchment and sat heavily, his mouth suddenly very dry. I, Severus Tobias Snape, being of sound mind and body, declare this to be my last will and testament. I hereby bequeath all my worldly goods to Harry James Potter, to include the contents of my Gringotts vault, should the Dunderhead whelp ever find the key, all deeds and properties, and all future earnings from all patents registered in my name. It was signed, dated, and witnessed by Argus Filch and Ferenczi. Harry set it down and rested his head in his hands, weary and heartsick beyond measure. Creature, Winky, and another pair of house elves Harry didn't know proved their worth over the next few days, moving anything Harry thought belonging to Snape out of the headmaster's rooms and office and storing it safely away. The bloody gargoyle refused to allow anyone into the tower until Harry had removed every last item, and it took him over 6 hours to locate a broken quill that had wedged itself under the cushion of a chair in Snape's private study. Only after it had been physically removed from the tower would the gargoyle allow McGonagall to go up. You'll find everything organised and labelled properly, Harry said, his eyes shadowed from his labours. Professor Snape made certain I couldn't see anything I wasn't meant to. He'd found a cabinet full of student records that had proved beyond his powers to resist. He'd reached for the folder marked Malfoy Draco and yelped in pain when it sliced his finger open. It was no accident. The same thing happened when he reached for his own. The experience made him far less curious when he stumbled across the files for the teachers. He valued his fingers too much to discover what Umbridge might have written about Trelawney. Thank you, McGonagall said, as she gazed at the gargoyle through narrowed eyes. I expect you'll want to get started on the dungeons next. Harry nodded. I was going to take Ron down to help me figure it out. He hesitated. Do you know why no one can get in? It was a stupid question, but Harry couldn't think of a better way to ask it. McGonagall's eyes opened in surprise. Have you not been doing there yet? She continued when Harry shook his head. A gate appeared 3 days after Voldemort fell. Fortunately, the dungeons were empty at the time, otherwise some poor sword would have been trapped inside. Not even the house elves can get in. They can't apparate into the dungeons. If Snape had set up a barrier that was impervious to house elves, how in the name of Merlin's socks was Harry supposed to get past it? A flash of anger seared him. It's just like that greasy git to give me something impossible to do. The lines in McGonagall's face softened. Or he set it up so only you could do it, she said gently. Phileas and I have examined the enchantments, Mr. Potter. There are several ways through them, but we're not you. We could blast a hole through the floor above them, I suppose, but heaven only knows what the result might be. Knowing Severus, we could very well bring down the entire castle. I reckon he's more likely to flood the dungeons than destroy Hogwarts, Harry said. This was his home after all. He studied her for a moment. You don't seem nearly as angry with him as you were earlier. Was it the letter?
McGonagall looked up the spiral staircase for a long moment, her lips pressed into a thin line.
Harry understood. He'd felt that way about both Snape and Dumbledore more often than he cared to admit.
Severus explained everything. She gave him a sharp glance. It appears Severus wasn't the only one with secrets, Mr. Potter.
Harry swallowed and nodded.
I'll go and start on the dungeons, Professor.
He hurried down the main staircase, collecting Ron on his way.
I still don't get it, Ron said as they trotted down the stairs.
Why you?
It's weird enough that he loved your mum.
He pulled a face, appearing for a moment as though he'd walk happily into a memory modification spell.
But you spent 6 years tearing down your dad.
I reckon it's his way of getting even with me for not being here last year. Figures he'd find a way to make up for not being able to give me detention.
From beyond the grave? That takes dedication.
Ron grabbed the newel post at the foot of the stairs and swung round towards the entrance to the dungeons, Harry hard on his heels. From this angle, the entrance appeared as it always had done, a stone archway leading to a wide tunnel that snaked its way through the bowels of the castle. They turned into the passageway and found it blocked. There was a tall gate of twisted iron rods set so close together that Harry thought his arm might get stuck between them. Three heavy bars served as crossbeams. There were no hinges that Harry could see, nor was there a lock to be found. No place to use a key. Rails and bars vanished into the stone surrounding the gate. He grabbed one of the bars and shook, but the gate didn't so much as rattle.
Any ideas? He asked as he stepped aside to let Ron take a look.
There was a loud bang the moment Ron's hands touched the bars. Sparks flew. Ron was hurled the length of the short passageway and found himself on his back in the entrance hall.
Ron!
Harry dashed over to find Ron blinking madly and trying to catch his breath.
Bloody hell! What do you reckon that was?
Ron breathed. Snape's way of saying I told you so, Harry growled. He didn't want anyone to help me. He reached down and pulled Ron to his feet. He stalked back to the archway and cast the detection spells that a week spent in the headmaster's tower had guaranteed he'd master. The bars of the gate were limned with green spellfire, and Harry blew out a deep breath.
I have no idea what that means.
Dunno, but it looks deadly enough, Ron said, eyeing Harry thoughtfully. Gate didn't do anything when you touched it, though. There is that.
And McGonagall said there are a few ways to get past it, Harry added. You don't suppose there's a lock on the other side?
He sidled up to the gate and reached out slowly, almost afraid to touch it given what had happened to Ron. Snape had already proven to be frightfully adept at timed spells.
Harry pushed his bare arm between the bars just above the centre crossbar and felt along the broad rail, reaching with his left hand as far as he was able. He pulled his arm back out and turned to put his right hand through, wand still firmly clutched within his grip. He leant against the bars and nearly fell through. Panicked, he leapt back, nearly dropping his wand in the process. Harry pushed past Ron and ran through the tall oak doors, stopping only when he felt the sun on his face. He sat on the wide granite steps, staring blankly at the forbidden forest at the end of the path. He barely glanced up when Ron sat down beside him.
"Would you do all this just to have some bits about your mum?" he asked quietly.
"Hard to say," Ron admitted. "I'm here because Mum wanted a girl, not because they wanted me particularly."
Harry didn't know what to say to that.
"The locket?" he ventured after a while.
"Yeah," Ron sighed. "Try not to let it bother me. But what if it was true?"
"You've never had to wonder if your mum and dad would be proud of you."
"They are."
Harry turned to face Ron. "Your family loves you. Even Percy, I suppose. They don't care you're not a girl. They never have done. They just want you to grow up to be a decent person, and you are."
"Then I'd move mountains," Ron said. "Especially if all I had was half a letter she wrote and a couple of photographs. I mean, yeah, my mum can be bloody annoying, but she's my mum."
Harry watched as another huge stone floated through the air, lifted by a team of flyers on broomsticks. What he wouldn't give to be working with them again instead of being stuck in the musty old dungeons, figuring out how to dismantle the spells Snape had said. At least up there he was productive, doing something important. His eyes followed the hewn stone as they manoeuvred it into position, remembering how his magic seethed and crackled under his skin as he poured his strength into his wand. All around them insects hummed and birds flapped their wings, whilst high above their heads they could hear the wordless shouts from the construction crews.
Out in the lake, the giant squid raised a lazy tentacle as if enjoying the wake it left behind.
"Why'd you run?" Ron asked into the quiet. "You were nearly through."
"Remember Nick's death day party?" Harry asked, leaning back on his elbows to better watch the stone's progress. "When that ghost walked through us?"
Goosebumps rose on his arms, and Harry felt the hair on the back of his neck rise.
Thinking about ghosts led to thoughts about the forest, and he didn't want to remember. Felt like that. And then I started to wonder what would happen if it became solid again and...
"Yeah," interrupted Ron with a shudder.
"That could get pretty ugly. Like apparating into the middle of a wall or something." He grimaced. "Being splinched was horrible enough. Still," he continued, "you were very nearly through. I don't reckon you noticed a lock?"
Harry shook his head. "I was a bit too freaked out to notice anything."
He sat up swiftly and came to his feet, brushing the dirt off the seat of his jeans. Wonder if there was something like that barrier Malfoy put up when he let the Death Eaters into the castle.
"When Malfoy what? When?"
"Sixth year, the night Dumbledore died."
Harry was careful not to say the night Snape murdered the headmaster.
He glanced in the direction of the astronomy tower, seeing with his mind's eye the dark mark hanging ominously over Hogwarts, a far more frightening omen than any Grimm could ever be. Then he rose and walked silently back into the castle, standing just inside the entrance hall until his eyes adjusted to the shadows there whilst he considered what set him apart from other witches and wizards. There was his curse scar, certainly, but he wasn't a Horcrux anymore, so maybe it was just a scar now. He wore glasses, as did Trelawney. He snorted as soon as that thought entered his head, willing to lay odds that Trelawney hadn't set foot near the dungeon since claiming the North Tower for herself. Laughter spilled out of him as he imagined the look on her face had Snape invited her down to help him set up a few defensive spells. Funnier still would be the sour lemon expression on Snape's.
"All right, I could use a laugh," Ron said, mystified.
He gazed around the empty entrance hall and stared at Harry as though he'd gone completely round the twist. "You're sounding a bit mental."
"Sorry. I was picturing Snape and Trelawney," Harry said with a snicker. "It was amusing anyway," he sliced it. "I guess you had to be there.
Let's try the gate again," he added as Ron snorted, clearly more horror-stricken than amused if his expression was any guide.
"There's a thought I never wanted in my head," Ron muttered, as he followed Harry back to the corridor.
Hands on hips, Harry stood in front of the gate.
"I had my right hand through, and I tried to look round the bars to see if there was a lock of any sort back there."
He put his right hand back through the bars and pressed against it.
This time, the bars stopped him. "What am I doing differently?"
Ron walked around Harry a bit, studying him from several angles.
"Weren't you holding your wand last time?"
"Was I?"
"I'll try it. No, you try it. First with your wand, then with mine."
"Me?"
Ron backed away.
"Look, even McGonagall said it had to be you.
Snape set this up so you'd be the only person who could get past this gate. You saw what happened when I touched it. Not keen on finding out what happened if I stuck my wand through there. Or yours either, come to that. Especially yours."
"Okay, bad idea. I get it." Harry drew his wand and took a deep breath. It had felt a little too much like walking through a cheese grater last time he slipped through the bars, and the sensation wasn't one he was in a hurry to repeat. Poking his wand through the bars, he pressed his forehead against them. They seemed to dissolve the moment they touched his skin, and he stepped through, shuddering as they closed behind him. It had been well over a year since Harry had been in the dungeons, and whilst they had never bothered him before, this time was different. The damp seeped into his skin, the musty smell of crumbling mortar clogging his nose. The air hung heavy around him like a mildewed cloak, and other than the steady drip, drip, drip echoing into a shallow pool of water, the dungeons were eerily silent. Harry shivered and turned his attention to the gate, hoping to find a way to let Ron through. There was no lock on this side either, no obvious means of opening it, or vanishing it, or blasting a hole in it. After his experiences in Dumbledore's office, Harry was reluctant to try using any of the bog-standard defensive spells, Confringo, Reducto, Expulso. Snape's enchantments were charmed to fight back, and Harry already knew Snape was more Slytherin in his thinking than anyone he'd ever met.
Lumos. Harry ran the glowing tip of his wand along the crossbeams and around the upright bars and shook his head.
"Well?" Ron asked.
"Nothing."
Harry blew out a breath and peered down the long tunnel leading deeper into the dungeons, the torches set in the great iron sconces barely throwing enough light to reach the wall opposite. Don't think there's anything you can do yet, he said, gazing at Ron through the grate. Tell McGonagall I'm down here. I'm trying to see if I can figure out what Snape was trying to protect.
Ron looked past Harry, worry written on his face in letters large enough that Harry couldn't miss it.
What if it's a trap? He asked as he levelled his gaze.
A trap? To do what?
Portkey me back to Malfoy Manor? Drop me back in the graveyard again?
Harry offered up a nervous smile.
Look, I know there's a chance that I might blow myself to bits, but Snape wanted me down here. There's something he wants me to find. Me. No one else. He might hope I manage to lose a finger or two, but I don't think he wants me to get hurt.
He said it himself. This is my N-E-W-T.
He's a right old bastard and a Death Eater, Ron pointed out. Or was. In 6 years, I think he was nice to you once. Or at least, not utterly vile.
Harry's eyes bugged out and he blinked.
Nice. Snape, he snorted. When was this one time?
Was I even conscious?
It would be in keeping with Snape's character to express relief that Harry hadn't died yet when he wasn't awake to hear it.
After the tournament, Ron said. Wasn't nearly as horrible as he could have been.
He was about to start spying on Voldemort, Ron. A bit nerve-wracking, don't you think?
God, how had Snape done it? How had he found the courage to apparate into that graveyard, not knowing if he was about to walk into the bright green spell light of the killing curse? At least Harry had known he was walking to his death when he entered the Forbidden Forest. And he hadn't been alone, the way Snape had been.
I have to do this, Harry said quietly. I'll see you at dinner.
Flexing his fingers around his wand, Harry descended into the dark labyrinth that Snape had once called home. The light died at the first turn, and Harry summoned a torch, breathing a little easier when it smacked solidly into his hand. Now he had both wand and weapon, though he wasn't positive he'd need either. He explored behind each door he encountered. The potions laboratories, the students' doors where ingredients were kept, broom cupboards and toilets. He found the entrance to the Slytherin common room, but didn't know the password and couldn't get in. The same was true for Snape's old office, but Slughorn's opened at a single touch. Other than a coating of fine dust, everything was as he remembered it. Harry kept walking, following the metronomic plink, plink, plink coming from somewhere deeper in the tunnels. He had never been this far into the dungeons, and the musty odour was filling his head and causing his nose to stuff up. It was cold. It was damp, and Harry wished he'd thought to wear something heavier than a simple t-shirt. Harry heard something skittering past his feet as he cast a warming charm over himself, and he started violently, nearly dropping the burning torch in his hand. Lumos! He shouted as his heart thundered in his chest. A rat froze for a moment, speared by a sharp beam of blue-white light, and Harry wished he knew the spell that forced animagi to shift back into their human forms. Hominum Revelio. Harry cast the spell with all his strength, and the rat let out a piercing shriek as the spell light wrapped around its body. It bounded down the tunnel, and Harry swore it was spitting like an enraged cat as it disappeared. He slumped against the wall for a moment, resting his hand over his hammering heart and panting as he waited for the fear to pass. As Harry rested, his eyes drifted over the wall in front of him, and he pushed himself up to standing when he noticed a faint light seeping out from under the wall. If he hadn't stopped when he did, he would have missed it entirely. He set the torch in a nearby sconce and went through his entire catalogue of revealing spells, learning nothing more than that magic was concealing a doorway.
Great. Found a doorway but no door, muttered Harry.
All he had was a faint archway and a hint of a door set into it. He traced a section of the line with his finger, the latent magic making the hair on his arms rise. Harry threw a few more spells in the direction of the doorway, including Finite Incantatum.
Some wizard you are. Don't think Merlin has anything to worry about, he sighed.
It was unsurprising that Snape wouldn't let him off that easily.
I still don't know what you mean by Amor Tentia is the key. Harry told the door in frustration. Couldn't you have left me a hint or something?
The torch hissed and crackled as the flames bit into a pocket of sap, and Harry marked the wall with a bright red glowing X, hoping it would last long enough for him to find his way back to. The dripping was beginning to grate on his nerves, so Harry picked up the torch and set off in search of it. He trudged through the tunnels, his mind working on the puzzle Snape had left for him, and he tried to organise his thoughts the same way he'd seen Hermione do it 1,000 times before. The gate, the potion, the door. That's what it boiled down to in the end. Harry had no idea about the gate.
It had materialised out of thin air 3 days after the battle, at roughly the same time McGonagall tried to get into the headmaster's office. The door was no different from the desk, except in scale. He'd find a way to open it. The potion, though. Harry knew he was capable of brewing Amortentia, or would be if he had the Half-Blood Prince's book, but he was nearly positive it had burned up in Crab's fiend fire, along with the rest of the room of hidden things. Harry reached the end of the dungeons, a bit disappointed to discover there were no cells to hold and torture prisoners, no manacles attached to long lengths of chain, no racks or iron maidens to punish recalcitrant students who refused to complete their homework or cause their cauldrons to explode. There was only a long crack in the ceiling, zigzagging between stones set closely together. Water dripped steadily, and judging from the colour of the stones and the worn depression in the floor, the ceiling had been leaking for years. Harry raised the torch and threw as much light up there as he could manage, watching each drop as it swelled, gathered and released its tenuous hold, only to speed through the air and become part of the puddle below. Though sorely tempted to try his hand at some of the reconstruction spells he'd learnt working on the restorations, he decided against it. If the stones over his head were the only thing between him and the lake, he'd rather they stay in place. Besides, if the leak had been there for as long as he suspected, it could wait until he knew what he was doing. It took Harry a week to find all the revealing and unlocking charms necessary to turn the mere suggestion of a doorway into a formidable barrier made of wood and iron surrounded by heavy stone. It was cold and uninviting, much like its former resident, and as Harry picked up the next book from the pile and opened it to a marked chapter on detecting protective enchantments, he despaired of ever opening it. Spell after spell sparkled and died against it. Every once in a while, the door would flicker a bit, appear a little less substantial, but a quick finite incantatum usually undid anything that threatened to transform the door back into a stretch of wall. In a fit of madness, Harry even got up off the floor and paced back and forth before it, chanting, "I need the room where Snape lived. I need the room where Snape lived. I need the room where Snape lived." Nothing happened. "Maybe you should make the potion," Ron suggested one night after Harry admitted defeat. "Or work on the gate instead." Harry shook his head and flopped down on the sofa, one arm draped across his forehead. "The gate is last. I don't know why, but I've a feeling it will come down when I've finished whatever it is I'm supposed to do." "So, what have you done so far?" "Have every book that mentions locks or doors. I have books on protective spells and enchantments. I have books on breaking protective spells and enchantments. I have books on every thief ever caught at Gringotts, just to see if there's an angle I've not thought of yet." "Like tunnelling under the door?" "Have you tried blasting it?" Ginny asked as she tucked herself under Harry's arm. "Sometimes brute force works." "This is Snape we're talking about," Harry said, lifting his head long enough to glance at the top of Ginny's head. A tiny frisson of anxiety prickled under his skin as she rested a knee against his leg, and he resisted the urge to shift away. "And yeah, I tried blasting it. Nearly cracked open my skull with that one." "What about a password?" Ron asked. "There are loads of enchantments that won't budge an inch without one." Harry sat bolt upright, his head turning in the direction of the gargoyle before he turned back to stare at Ron. "You're a bloody genius," he said with a broad grin. "A password? Why didn't I think of that?" "Because it's Snape, and he knows about a million more words than you do," Ginny teased, as she pulled Harry back into the sofa. The next day found Harry sitting on a thick blanket in front of the door to Snape's room, surrounded by books, a small hamper packed with food, and a lantern. "Okay, then." He picked up the book on top of the pile and began to read aloud. "Aconite, Acromantula venom, Agrippa, Antimony, Armadillo bile, Ashwinder eggs, frozen Ashwinder eggs, Asphodel, Asphodel root, powdered Asphodel root, powdered root of Asphodel." 7 hours and 42 sips of pumpkin juice later, Harry had made his way into the D's and needed desperately to use the toilet. Some of the things he'd read had been interesting, though he'd rather not write 15 inches on any of them. When he returned from the bathroom, he picked up the book and began again. "Dahlia. Dahlia rhizome. Rhizome. Daisy. Dalmatian spots. Spots of Dalmatian." Harry didn't care to think about what collecting that might entail. "Damask rose. Rose of Damascus. Dandelion. Dandelion fluff. Dandelion root." Who knew so many things could go into potions? "Jabberandi. Jabberknoll feathers, Jabberknoll wings, Jacamar leaves, Jacaranda pods, Jack in the pulpit sap, Jaguar whiskers, jasmine, night blooming jasmine. When it reached the point where Harry was seeing lines of text with his eyes closed, he called it a night and joined the others in the Great Hall for more research and a bite to eat. Professor, he asked as he sat down, is it possible to open a door if you don't know the password to it? A glint of amusement entered Flitwick's eyes.
In theory, yes. What spells have you tried?
Harry rattled off a number of blasting spells, exploding spells, vanishing spells, and a couple of incendiary spells that he really wished he hadn't tried. The backlash from those had resulted in a quick trip to the infirmary. Pomfrey had even been kind enough to grow his eyebrows back. He hadn't told Ron and Ginny about that one. Ron would have laughed, and Ginny was getting too good at imitating her mother.
And what did you learn from that? Flitwick asked.
That brute force doesn't work very well against passwords? Flitwick laughed.
Yes, exactly, though a Gryffindor would have tried them all, just to be certain.
His expression took on a note of sympathy.
The only other way to get around a password, Mr. Potter, is by using the blood or saliva of the person who set it.
His eyes dimmed.
Fresh blood. The presumption is that the person is either deceased or injured to the point where the password cannot be spoken.
Harry sighed and began eating automatically. Thank you, sir. Ocelot saliva. Saliva of ocelot. Octopus powder. Powdered octopus. Harry took a deep breath as he quickly scanned the list of oils. Agar, Adjuvane, Angelica, Anise, Asafoetida. The list went on for pages. Dill, Elecampane, Eucalyptus, Hickory, Horseradish, Hyssop, Mandarin, Marjoram, Melaleuca, Rose, Rosehip, Rosemary, Rosewood, Yarrow, Ylang Ylang, Zedoari. There. Now back to the plants and animals. Ocapi tail, oleander, olibanum, oligano, olingo claws, desiccated olm, opossum breath, salt, salt water, salt petra, sardine, scarab beetle. Harry was exhausted. Words no longer made sense and his voice no longer sounded human to his ears. He wasn't certain he was even speaking English anymore. But he knew Ron was right. The door required a password, and he'd sit here until the end of time if that's how long it took before he figured it out. On and on it went, day after day, hour after hour. By the time Harry had finished reading aloud the title of each entry in Cornucopia Pharmacologicae, A Potions Master Guide, his voice was a thin, tattered sheet of sandpaper scraping over rough stone. The door hadn't so much as flickered, much less opened. When Harry finally read the last entry, Zoysia Seeds, and stumbled up to Gryffindor Tower, he discovered Ginny waiting for him, her hands on her hips and her dark eyes flashing angrily. He gazed blearily at her and let out a breath while trying to pull together enough energy to work out why she was annoyed at him. When nothing appeared to be forthcoming, he pushed past her and headed for the dormitory stairs. "You're not even going to say hello?" she demanded. Harry paused, his foot on the bottommost step. "I'm not sure what I've done," he said uneasily, "so I thought it best to go up to bed." He turned back and gave her a weak smile. "I'm really tired, Gin."
"You've been spending every waking minute in that dungeon, and when you've finished for the day, you get something from the kitchen to go straight up to your room. Ron says you're asleep by the time he comes up, but you're gone again when he gets up. I have to figure this out. You know I do. But you haven't any time for me, or for Ron either."
She exhaled forcefully, her nostrils flaring. "I know you want to find out more about your mum, but it doesn't need to take all your time." Ginny took a step forwards and rubbed her hand along Harry's arm. "You'll be heading for London soon, and I'll still be here waiting for you."
Harry tried to smile at her, but his lips refused to cooperate, and he found himself taking a step back towards the stairs. "I'll try to remember to come up for air," he promised, "but the sooner I finish this, the more time I'll have for you."
Ginny's expression shifted, the fire fading from her eyes and leaving little but guilt and grief behind. Harry knew that feeling well. "I don't think it'll end for you until you've finished with this," she said stiffly. "Just try not to lose yourself down there." She stepped forwards and kissed him, and Harry found himself struggling to return it. "Go upstairs, Harry," she said coolly. "You're knackered." Harry shifted uncomfortably. He had no intention of hurting her, but his brain felt full of mush, and despite doing nothing but reading aloud for the past few days, he was worn out. "What are you going to do?" he asked. "Play Quidditch, I suppose. There's usually a match down at the pitch after supper." She arched her brows in silent question, but Harry shook his head. "I'll see you later," she said. But her eyes followed him all the way up to his room, and Harry felt crawled into bed beside him. It wasn't until he closed his curtains and said a mild repelling charm that he felt truly alone. It wasn't until Harry was about a third of the way through the list of potions in the Potioner's compendium that a thought occurred. Snape wanted Harry to be able to open the door. It stood to reason, therefore, that the password would be something Harry was familiar with. And given Snape thought Harry was only a small step above Neville in the ability to brew a decent potion, it was unlikely to be potions-related. "Think, Harry." He stood up and paced in front of the door, his mind whirling with new possibilities. The password would be something Snape knew Harry would know, but very few others would even consider. The answer slammed into him, and he felt his throat tighten in response. He turned, faced the door, and said quietly, "Lily Evans." Nothing happened. Harry gave the door a hard smack. "Damn it, Snape!" His hand throbbed and he stared sullenly at the unyielding door. There had to be something he was missing, something obvious, simple. Something that would make Harry feel like the dunderhead Snape always accused him of being. Afterwards, he wouldn't be able to say what made him try it, but he rested his forehead against the door and murmured, "Harry Potter." He heard a subtle click, felt the magic give way, and the door opened a crack. He leapt back as if scalded, wand out and eyes wide. "Are you fucking kidding me?" Harry pulled the door closed, felt the protective charm snap back in place and tried again. "Harry Potter." The door stood resolutely closed, so he laid his hands on it and repeated the password. Once again there was a click, more felt than heard, and the door swung inwards an inch. Grabbing his lantern, Harry took a cautious step into the potions master's rooms and looked around. A worn brown sofa sagged lazily against the wall, the depressions in it suggesting that Snape had slept there more often than not. A tattered winged back chair sat near a tall fireplace that must have served as a flue. A squat table had been placed to the right of the chair, the height perfect for a cup of tea. A large desk was shoved unceremoniously into a corner. Empty bookcases lined the walls. Harry shivered as he pressed his way inside. The room felt isolated, lonely, as though its prior inhabitant had occupied it but never really lived in it. There were no pictures on the mantelpiece, no works of art on the walls, not even a portrait to keep Snape company. The furniture was coated in a thick layer of dust, adding a layer of neglect to the air of melancholy that hung over the place like a shroud. Two doors flanked the fireplace. The one on the left led to Snape's bedroom, empty but for a spacious wardrobe and a narrow canopied bed. A small bathroom lay beyond a narrow archway on the far side of the room, the countertop no less dusty than the rest of the small suite. Harry found Snape's private laboratory behind the other door, and his brow furrowed when he stepped inside. It hadn't come as a surprise that the rest of Snape's quarters were empty. Harry had already gone through Snape's personal belongings when he cleaned out the headmaster's private rooms, but he had expected to find Snape's brewing equipment and personal stores of ingredients here in the dungeons. This room, though, was as empty as the others. It didn't make any sense. Why would Snape want him to spend days breaking into an empty set of rooms? Why would he have to set up such elaborate enchantments if there was nothing to find? "What are you hiding?" Harry wondered aloud, as he turned in a small circle, his eyes travelling over empty counters and shelves. He crouched in front of a cupboard door and opened it, disturbing a spider who beat a hasty retreat into a dank corner. It was as he walked back into the sitting room that he noticed something odd. There were no footprints. In fact, the floor was nearly pristine. The night Harry had met Slughorn flashed through his mind, and a slow grin curved his lips. "You bastard," he said as he snorted out a laugh. He strode over to the bookcase and dragged his finger through a pile of dust, feeling the unmistakable tingle of magic against his skin. "Very clever." Harry gathered up all his things and set off in search of McGonagall.